So we've come to end of chapter 6 in Luke's Gospel as we've been looking at this theme, following Jesus. And this is the last in this series before we move into some of the Passion events prior to Easter. And as we do that, I wonder how you're feeling. We've been having some Bible teaching and challenging messages on what it looks like to follow Jesus. And I wonder whether you're feeling a bit like this morning. Am I living like Jesus? The fingers pointing. How am I doing? Have I managed to take on board the teaching that I've heard and put it into practice? It can be quite hard to do that, can't it? We hear on a Sunday different speakers speak from the Bible, and we try and kind of take on board a couple of the challenges maybe and live it out. But if you're anything like me, and I preach but also aim to put into practice what I preach, it's hard. It's challenging, and sometimes we can be a little bit overrun by that and feel like, well, what's the point in carrying on? It's Jesus was the Son of God. He did amazing miracles. He taught in an incredible way that blew people away in many respects. And how on earth can I live like Jesus? How can I love my enemies? How can I care for the poor in the way that Jesus did? How can I put into practice the stuff that he is encouraging me to put into practice? And sometimes we can get a bit low maybe and hard on ourselves and go, oh, it's just too hard. I think I need to just kind of keep going as a mediocre Christian and give up on this whole being like Jesus thing. Well, sadly, that's not an option that Jesus really encouraged us to do. He says, hear my word, put it into practice. He says, keep going, persevere, follow me. It's going to cost you a lot, but follow me. And as we look this morning at this subject, I want us to think about how we can even begin to do this as we maybe reflect on some of the challenging messages that Jesus has brought us over the past 5 or 6 weeks. It's been parents' evening kind of period in many schools. I know a number of the teachers here have had parents' evenings. If you're a parent with children, you've been along to parents' evenings, possibly. And my kids go to Charlton Primary School, and they do their parents' evenings like most schools, I imagine. But what I found quite interesting on this particular occasion was how child-centered it all is. You know, you get that sheet, and they're kind of hiding the sheet of the ticks, excellent behaviour, progressing well in their learning, they're emerging, or they're at the expected level, or that they're even exceeding, and you're kind of trying to find out where your child's at on the sheet. They're not really too bothered because they're not aware, but as a parent, you're looking, and anyway, they unveiled the sheet, and there it was. This was where my kids were at. I thought, okay, phew, their behaviour's good. That's the main thing. The other stuff, well, there's time for that. Their behaviour's all right. And we kind of get wrapped in this idea that it's about us being good and well-behaved and achieving and not causing problem. But then what comes next is the whole, well, this is where your child's at. This is where they'd like to be at, or be good for them to be at. So how they can actually progress and be at the next stage. And then what certainly do at Charlton Primary, I imagine this happens in other schools as well, is they say, so child, Ethan, Lois, how are you going to get there? And suddenly the child is the one that should be, in my view, doing the teacher's job of saying, this is how you can get there. And suddenly the child is trying to answer that big question of, this is how you can reach this level in your literacy, your numeracy, your whatever other areas of learning. And sometimes I think the Christian life can feel a bit like that. And as we come to an end of a series, it can feel a bit like a kind of parenting. How am I doing? How much am I living like Jesus? Where am I at? What would I like to be like? And how on earth can I get there? And maybe some of those questions are in your mind. They've been in my mind this week as I've been preparing. And we're going to see that living like Jesus is only possible with a new heart and leads to a life of love in action. It's only possible with a new heart. But it does lead somewhere. It leads to a life full of love in action. We're going to see what we're like. A bit like that parents' evening. We're going to see also what we want to be like, how maybe we'd love life to be like in terms of loving others, forgiving, caring, and then also how to actually live like this. Is it like a child with a view in mind of wanting to be an Olympic swimmer. Well, you can want to be an Olympic swimmer, but there's an awful lot of things you've got to do to be an Olympic swimmer, not least swimming every day and training and taking on coaching and realizing that you probably need a certain physique. I don't know if you realize that the average Olympic swimmer has probably has a larger nose than an ordinary person. That's partly why they're Olympic swimmers. They can breathe really well. So some of us in the room might be more suited to Olympic swimming than others. I won't say who, probably me actually. Let's read the passage, shall we? Nothing really to do with nose sizes or Olympic swimming, but Jesus' words to the disciples and the crowds that gathered on how to live, how to follow Jesus. Let's listen to his words in Luke chapter 6, verse 37. Do not judge and you'll not be judged. Do not condemn and you'll not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. He also told them this parable. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into a pit? The student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me take the speck out of your eye," when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They're like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When the flood came, the torrent struck that house, but it could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete. Some powerful words there from Jesus, some really insightful words, and we're going to look at that passage and try and see how we can apply it to our lives today. What are we like? Well, so far Jesus has been explaining what it looks like to live following Jesus, to be blessed even if you're poor and suffering and accused, to be wary and indeed in a dangerous position if you're rich and comfortable and not looking to God for the things of life. Some hard teaching from Jesus. But what is it this passage really shows us about what we're like? Well, what I certainly was struck by was that we find it easier to judge and condemn our enemies rather than to forgive them. Now you might wonder who your enemy is at the moment, but who is it that you find irritable and difficult and frustrating? Who is it that you're struggling to connect with at the moment at work or in your family? Who is it that you view as beyond grace and forgiveness? Maybe there are people. And what Jesus says here is, do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn and you'll not be condemned. Instead, forgive. Give. Be merciful as your Father is merciful. But what are we like? Well, I think the reality is that our natural desires and the way we are as humans is that we find it a lot easier to criticize and critique and be negative than to be positive and forgiving and gracious. I think we could probably all relate to that, couldn't we? Not just first thing in the morning before you've kind of had your cup of tea and someone catches you off guard, but maybe even at a stressful point on a Friday at the end of the working week where you've had enough and you want to go home and your boss suddenly says there's something else you need to do. And instead you say, well, you know, I've been working hard all week. Why can't I get home without another task to accomplish? And we can be critical and judgmental Now, actually, Jesus isn't just talking about those that we relate well to. He's talking about those that possibly might even be our enemies, those that might be against us. He's practically explaining what it means and looks like to love our enemies. And what he says is, don't judge them. Don't condemn them. Instead, forgive them. Be merciful. Be generous. And that certainly goes against my natural way. And what a challenge that is for us. So do not judge and you'll not be judged. The other thing that it shows us is that we tend to, how we treat others is connected to how we will be treated by others and God. So generally in life, if we're kind and generous and forgiving, it's likely that those that we're like that to respond with a similar approach. Well, we tend to relate well to people if we treat them in that way. But certainly those that we are more challenging to and critical of and maybe find easy to judge, we've got to be aware that we may well also be judged and criticized by those individuals. But throughout this passage, this section of teaching, Jesus is very clearly pointing somewhere, not just to life today, but also to the time when Jesus will come and judge the living and the dead, all people. And we have eyes here on the fact that how we behave with one another, how we judge and condemn or forgive and show grace to those that we know is connected to the judgment that we will receive by Jesus. And that's challenging. That's hard, isn't it? We have a certain bent towards criticism and judging others. For some reason, we can't see why people behave in a certain way when we don't, rather than seeing our own wrong. There's a challenging passage in Matthew's Gospel that highlights this as a great parable. And rather than telling a story or illustration to point out, I thought Jesus would probably do that far better than I would. So listen to his words in Matthew 18, verse 21. Peter came up and said, "Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as 7 times? Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you 7 times, but 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children, all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything.' Out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. But when that same servant went out, he found out of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, 'Pay what you owe.' So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you.' He refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, 'You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me, and you have not had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you.' And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." Challenging words. What a story of forgiveness. The challenge before us is to be forgiving of others because God has forgiven us. What we're like, well, we're possibly a long way from that. The other thing is that we fail to see our wrong and instead judge others. So not only are we quicker to judge others, but we're not very good at identifying our own sin, our own wrong, our own error of our ways, the bad stuff in our life. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? This is a classic metaphor that Jesus uses, isn't it? It's a powerful illustration. It's very easy to, and Jesus uses this picture, this illustration, to really demonstrate how unbelievable we can be. We can see people with a tiny speck of wrong in their life and yet ignore the big plank of wrong, the problem within our own. How we need to correct that, how we need to put that right. We're very unlike Jesus, aren't we? We judge others and we ignore our own sin. We find it all too easy to spot other people's mistakes and errors and sins. And yet actually we fail to look at our own life and examine ourselves and go, this is where I need to change. I know that's the case for me. I quite readily get annoyed at others when they start putting people down in public or to other people. And all too recently, I know I've done that. And I said something unkind to another person that I thought, well, how on earth can I be frustrated with others when I do it myself? We fail. We mess up. We're very unlike Jesus. If you were asked to paint a picture of yourself, I wonder how you'd find that. I'd actually get really, I'm not really an artist by any stretch of the imagination. I used to find in my GCSE art classes portraits or painting people particularly difficult. You know, an animal somehow was easier than a person's face. I don't know what it is. But if you imagine you were asked to paint a picture of yourself or draw maybe your medium's pencil rather than paintbrushes, I don't know. But you imagine how you would do that. You've got a certain picture in your mind of what you look like. You couldn't look at a mirror and do it. You just have to do it from memory. How would you do that? What size, we'll keep on the theme of noses. This is in my brain for some reason. What size nose would you draw for yourself? How would your eyes and your mouth and the style of your hair be? Now, I imagine you would do it with the understanding of what you look like. You'd probably give yourself a nice small button nose and high cheekbones and, I don't know, no grey hair or whatever it might be. If you asked a friend to draw a picture of you, they would do it without the ways that we see ourselves that are slightly distorted. They'd probably do it in a greater, truer way that portrait should be, with the right size nose, with the right colour hair, with the right level of cheekbones or whatever it may be. And actually, isn't it a bit like that in life, that we tend to see ourselves often in a better way than maybe we should? And that can be one temptation. We are not very good at spotting and identifying our own wrong, our own sin. We judge others, we condemn others, we're critical and negative, we're slow to forgive, and we mess up. And yet, where is the hope? This is Jesus' hard teaching. We can feel quite beaten and battered and bruised, can't we? Where is the hope? What do we want to be like? How can we move forward? Well, Jesus illustrates ways that we can live out what it's like to forgive. And the first thing he does is this tremendous illustration of what a good measure is. Loving others by being forgiving and generous looks like this. It looks like a good measure pressed down, shaken together and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Now, in Jesus' day, the grain would be collected from certain points when it was harvested, and individuals would go, if they didn't have a field of their own, to buy grain, and their cloaks, their outer cloaks, could be pulled up, just the outer one, not both, just the outer cloak, and form a pocket where grain could fill inside. Now, if you imagine doing that and you wanted to get a good deal, you'd make sure that you shook all the grain down so the air squeezed out, you padded it down so that a bit more could be filled to the top level of your garment. And the picture Jesus is using here is of that, but not just to the level of your garment, but in fact overflowing. This full portion that is overflowing. That's the kind of measure given to the individual who is forgiving and generous to others, enemies and friends alike. And as we conduct ourselves in that way with others in our relationships, so we can have the hope of Jesus giving us a similar generous portion in when we are with him in heaven. But more than that, we can experience it now in his forgiveness. And so Jesus here is teaching how to live and do relationships based on his own ability to forgive and show generosity to others because of how he loves. But more than that, Jesus illustrates what it looks like or what we might want to live like in a few other ways. And one is leading the spiritually blind. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into a pit? Well, probably they would, wouldn't they? This is the statement Jesus comes up with, a question. If you've got a blind person leading another, they're going to fall into a pit. They're going to fall over. They're not going to get across the road. They're going to struggle. And so Jesus is saying, look, don't be blind. Be able to lead others by being spiritually aware, not condemning and judging, but forgiving and being gracious. That's the kind of leader you want to be. That's the kind of disciple you want to be. So what do we want to be like? We want to be generous and forgiving. We want to lead others spiritually because we've come to know Jesus himself. But we also want to be humble and teachable, don't we? The student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. You imagine your regular rabbi or teacher in Jesus' day. They would have had a following, a group of people, disciples, that listened to their teaching. But the students didn't have Google or kind of some other form of encyclopedia where they could go and check the teacher's teaching was right and find out more and come back and say, oh, actually, this is what the Greek says or this is what the Hebrew means and all the rest. So generally, the teachers would teach the students to the level that they were at, and the students would become up to the understanding and knowledge and wisdom of the teacher, and that was it. That was the aim, to be like your teacher. Jesus calls us to be like him. But to do that, we need to be humble and teachable. The student can't appear to be above the teacher. Well, they can't be, because the teacher is the one who has the knowledge that is being given to the student. We want to be teachable and humble, don't we, if we're following Jesus? We want to be able to lead the blind, to spiritually be wise and mature. We want to be forgiving and loving. But more than that, we want to bear fruit, good fruit, having a good heart. The next illustration that Jesus uses is this, and it talks about the figs. Where'd you get a fig from or a grape from? Well, not from a thorn bush or a briar, but from a fig tree or a grape tree. Help me out. What do you get a grape from? A vine. So we bear the fruit that comes from within our hearts. A good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart. And an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. You can only produce what you are from your heart. And that brings us to the challenge, doesn't it? That we want to be like Jesus, but in reality, we often feel like hypocrites because we don't bring good fruit. We aren't as humble and as teachable and as forgiving and as caring as we like. We have eyes like that primary student at that primary student-parent conference saying, this is what I want to be like, but how on earth can I get there? How on earth can I get all my wristbands for my times tables? How on earth can I get my handwriting to that level? How on earth can I be what I want to be like? I can't imagine getting there. And so we may well have our eyes set on being like Jesus, but the question is how? I learnt the trumpet as I was growing up. You haven't seen me be in a band playing the trumpets because I've not really played for the best part of 15 years, and I'm really blessing you by not joining the bands. But when I first started, I wanted to be like Louis Armstrong. You guys like a bit of jazz? Yeah? Fantastic, isn't it? What a sound. And I could have wanted to be like him all I liked. But to do that, I would have probably needed a new mind and personality, different lips, greater lungs, all sorts of things to do the amazing things something like Louis Armstrong could do with his trumpeting and cornet playing. Actually, as much as I'd have tried, I don't think I'd have been like him in the end. Is it the same for us and Jesus? Is it the same for us and what it means to follow Jesus? That as much as we want to be following Jesus, living like Jesus, loving others, being forgiving, can we do it? Is it worth the hassle? Are we up to it? Is it possible? That is the big question. Are we just going to be the kind of people that walk around feeling a bit hypocritical? Or is this something we can be? And Jesus gives us a big clue. How to live like this. And the way we do it is by receiving a new heart. By receiving a new heart. In the verse that I just read, it said, "For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of," in Luke 6:45. So the key is the heart. The mouth speaks what the heart is full of. If we can get the heart right, there is hope. We can speak words of love and forgiveness and grace. We can bear good fruit that has an impact on others. We can begin to move in the direction that Jesus calls us to when we say, "Yes, I'll follow you." But the problem is, in Jeremiah 17, one of the books in the Old Testament, it says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it?" See, we're in a difficult situation. Our heart is rotten. It's bad. It's not in a good place. But the promise that Jesus gives us and that the Old Testament outlines is this. It says in Ezekiel, "I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh." Wow, what a promise in the Old Testament. And with Jesus coming and describing what it looks like to live for him, he doesn't just describe a kind of pattern of living and go away, go, "There you go, have your best shot. If you're up to it, fantastic. If you're not, tough." He provides the way for us to live like that. Because he doesn't just live a life, he dies a death that makes it possible. And Jesus in his death, taking our sin and our wrong, the badness in our lives, and making a way back to God the Father through his sacrificial death, promises to give us a new heart. He cleans up our bad heart and makes us new. We leave from having a heart of stone, which is hard and dull and dead, instead being given a heart of flesh, which is living and alive by the Spirit, and able to connect and relate to God and therefore others in the way that we would want. So for the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. Because of the new covenant that Jesus brought in, the Spirit of Christ dwells in our heart. That's what it says in Ephesians and in other passages. As we put our faith in Jesus, we receive the Spirit of Christ in our hearts. That means living for Christ, living for Jesus, like Jesus, is possible. It's not beyond us. We are on a journey throughout this life to become more like Jesus. We won't fully get there until heaven. We've got our eyes on when we will fully get there. But it means we can begin to grow in our ability to not judge but forgive, to not condemn but to give. To not be impatient, but patient. To show mercy and grace rather than frustration and bitterness. The other way that Jesus spells out how we can live like this, first of all, by a new heart, is by putting into practice Jesus' teaching. One of the other most famous portions of the New Testament in terms of Jesus' teaching is this. And it's all about hearing it and doing it. Let me just recap slightly with that passage because it helps us to understand it. "As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. They are like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When the flood came, the torrent struck that house, but it could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete." How do we live like this? Well, with a new heart, yes. But by putting into practice Jesus' teaching, hearing it and doing it. The New Testament is full of references about living out what we hear so that we're not hypocritical, but we're authentic. Yes, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to not implement Jesus' teaching as we should. And there is God's grace and forgiveness in those times. But as we hear the Bible and Jesus' teaching, and as we try to put it into practice, we will become well built, just like a house built on a deep foundation. Anyone here built, sort of dug a foundation before? And filled it with cement. Yeah, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, the hands are going up. I imagine it's hard work and it doesn't happen quickly. There's a lot of soil you've got to dig out. There's a depth to it. There's an accuracy to the dimensions you need to get right. The passage here talks about building it, a deep foundation on a rock. I guess we don't do that. We put cement in. Is that right? We put cement in for our foundations and other things. I'll let the builders correct me afterwards. And so as we build our lives on the teaching of Jesus, it means putting into practice Jesus' words. That makes us well built. It means that we can withstand the storms of life and not get knocked over because we're not building our life on ourselves, but on Jesus. He is our foundation. He is our rock. He is our cornerstone. And we find these words used of Jesus regularly, that in order for us to have hope in life, in order for us to live in any way like Jesus outlines in these verses, he needs to be at the core of who we are. And so we need a new heart in order to put into practice his teaching. And the final way is by showing our love by the way we treat others. So we need a new heart. We need to be well built on the foundation of Jesus' teaching. And we show that through the way we interact with one another, whether friends or family or enemies or colleagues or neighbors, showing our love through the way we treat others. And so we forgive and we're generous and we're humble in our discipleship and bearing good fruit in all that we say and do. And as a church, we've got a vision to be a growing church that is equipping others and impacting those around us. It's bearing good fruit. It's impacting. It's equipping through humble discipleship. It's growing as we forgive and as we welcome and as we care for those within our church. That's how lives can be transformed, based on the gospel, not just on moral teaching, but on God's grace and mercy to us that we then show to others. That's what it looks like to live like Jesus. So as we finish, we can hold on to that hope that we're being transformed into the likeness of Jesus. That's God's plan for each one of you this morning. If you follow Jesus, if you have faith in him, his plan for you, his purpose is to for you to be transformed into the likeness of Jesus. And we live that out in our everyday lives right now, right here. But it does start with a new heart. And so I do want to say that if you've never come to Jesus and said, I'm going to follow you, count me in, I'm going to leave my old way and my hard heart and I'm going to come and in faith receive this new heart, you can do that today. You can do that now. You can do that in your room at home this week as you think and pray about it. Come to him in faith. Receive his rest. Receive a new heart. It's the only way we can live like life the way that he calls us to. And throughout Luke's gospel so far, we've met different people that have done that. The good news for the sick and the unclean, the demon possessed, the disciples, the fishermen, the tax collectors like Levi, the lepers and the paralyzed, the marginalized. All of these people throughout Luke's gospel come to him in faith and they receive forgiveness and a new heart. But let's not just stop there. Let's make sure that this new heart that we have leads to a life of love in action. Not just a feeling we receive. In fact, instead, what it is an action, a way of living, a way of relating to God and others. And that's something we can aim to be, well built, so that we can help others follow Jesus. It's great that we meet together regularly on a Sunday morning. It's great that those of us in life groups try and kind of discuss more the questions that have come up from a sermon on a Sunday so that we can try and put into practice the teaching that we hear. But if you're not in a life group or if you can't make it, why not go over the sermon and think more about the teaching that you've heard on your own and try and put it into practice. Be well built so that you can be used by God to see others come to follow Jesus. I'm going to pray now, and then we're going to respond with a bit of space to pray and also to sing in response to who Jesus is, the rock the foundation, the cornerstone. And as we come back to this aim of living for Jesus, let's say again, Lord, clean my heart. Help me to live for you. Let me pray. Father, thank you so much for your mercy to us. Thank you so much for your forgiveness through Jesus Christ. How we need it. Lord, help us to come to you afresh this morning and say, Lord, I need help. I too quickly judge and criticize and condemn others. Help me not to. Help me to be loving and forgiving and gracious. Lord God, would you give us a clean heart? And I thank you that you do that through your Son Jesus, who died in our place and whose Spirit comes into us as we come to you in faith. Lord, help us to live for you this week. Help us to hear and apply the teaching that we hear. Help us to love others. In Jesus' name.